Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to The River. This is Tom Fuller coming to you from beautiful Portland, Oregon, with my friends and your hosts, authors Maxine Marcellini and Jeannie St. John Taylor. Every Monday, Maxine and Jeannie get together to share what's on their hearts with listeners around the world. They chat with other authors and friends on a wide variety of topics. Some bring a laugh, some cause us to wipe away a tear, but all of them send rivers of blessing into our lives. These shows can be life-changing if our hearts are open and allow the river of God's love to pour into our deepest needs. So, listeners, are you ready? Now's the perfect time for me to stop talking and let the ladies take us on today's exciting journey down the river.
Hello, I'm glad to have all of you out there listening today. This is Jeannie St. John Taylor. Maxine Marcellini will not be with me today because she is on the way to visit and take care of a sick relative. So she could use all of your prayers, all of your wonderful prayers her way. It's wonderful what she's doing. We have today, or I think we have, a wonderful guest for you, which is Pastor Troy Evans, who pastors the Edge Church in Grand Rapids. He ministers to gang leaders, to gang members, and hip-hop dancers, which is a culture that a lot of us don't know a whole lot about. So we're waiting for him to call in right now, and if he doesn't call in, we'll just chat, the rest of us. But he has a very interesting, wonderful, rich life. He went to church when he was young, and then he got away. I don't know that he ever knew the Lord. He just totally drifted from that sort of life, and he found his meaning in gangs, and he is such an expert on the subject. I feel like he has a PhD in the subject. And he went from a second grade education as an adult, as a young adult, to God reached out and found him. And he realized later that how God was just moving him along all the way, directing everything about his life. He could just tell that later, but he didn't know it at the time. He was not looking for God. And what he found in the streets was kind of the same thing that we look for in the church, which is love and respect and family and friends. And the streets kind of mimic that, but they do it in a way that's based on hatred and violence instead of love. So we're going to wait on him to call in. And his book, again, is The Edge of Redemption. And his name is Pastor Troy Evans. So, meanwhile, I think what I'm going to do is tell you a couple of answer to prayer stories that I have right here in a book in front of me. I wrote this book a long time ago for AMG Publishers, and it's interesting because a lot of the stories in the book happened to me, but not all of them, and they're pretty miraculous. I think God answers prayer in all of our lives. He answers it for a lot of us. He answers it little prayers and right away. A lot of us, we don't see prayers as much in our society because we don't need to see prayers in our society as often. I think you see prayers more often when you're in a society that is poverty-stricken. And I know that when I was younger, I saw so many prayers answered out of poverty. And I remember, tell you one about my grandmother and her children. My grandmother is from Michigan, which is the same place where Pastor Evans lives. And she was born in Highland. She was actually born in Germany. My grandfather was born in Highland, and she lived in Highland. And she was very poor. She was a servant in my grandfather's household when they met, very poor. And she, her husband died. My grandfather died and left her with five children, some in high school, one ready to go to college. And they had no means of support back then. That was depression times. And what they had was one cantaloupe field that was going to supply their food for the next year. So they went out and they were together doing what they called blocking the cantaloupe. And that was the seedlings were just not real high, and they were just getting the field prepared for the summer growing system. And they saw in the distance a storm approaching. The skies were hot and sunny that day, but they could see hail sweeping in, kind of like a curtain from the distance. And so my grandmother gathered her kids around her, and they started praying at the top of their voices, and they prayed and prayed and prayed out loud with that. The storms blowing around them and the dark skies surrounding them, and it was a terrifying time. And they knew that every bit of food that they were going to have for the next few years, for the next year, all the money that they would have for food was in that field. So they prayed and prayed, and as they prayed, they saw this hail coming like a curtain, and they saw it take out one sweep across one field on their left and another on their right and another around the other way, and it hit the lake, Pettibone Lake, beside them, and they could see it bouncing in the lake or hitting the lake and bouncing in the fields, but it didn't even touch their field. It totally destroyed the other fields, and it didn't even touch their field. And so that was just one of the answers to prayer in my family. I'm going to read you a story, another one, if I can find it here. Well, this is my grandfather and grandmother on the other side of my family. No one ever told Etta Belle that she was permitted to pray. She grew up without knowing it. She still didn't know it when she married Matt Henry Perry at age 18. Out of desperation, she cried out to God a time or two during childbirth, but convinced she had overstepped her bounds and usurped the job of preachers, her prayers ended there, and she needed prayer. Few people in the Kentucky mountains lived beyond subsistence level in the early 1900s. Etta's young family was no exception. Mac Henry barely provided for her and the nine children. Worse, he studied witchcraft and enjoyed himself with the local floozies. Once during labor, Etta dragged herself out of bed to find Mac misbehaving with a midwife in another room. Etta Mel made the best of things, however. She wallpapered their Kentucky shack with a newspaper and scrubbed the pine floors with sand and lye-soaked until they glistened like snow diamonds. The garden she planted every summer provided most of their food. She canned beans, boiled sugar cane into molasses, scattered corn to fatten the frying chickens, and fed potato peelings to the hog. Quite simply, Etta worked from dawn till dusk without much hope of pleasure, until the day she heard about a tent meeting in a nearby town. With her three oldest girls in tow, she walked 6 miles to the meeting, then 6 miles home. She walked it. But in the 2 hours she sat on the rough bench in the back of the tent, God spoke to her. As soon as the old-time preacher gave the altar call, Etta and her girls rushed to the altar and accepted Christ as their Savior. Etta felt as though they had dug the British crown jewels from the manure in the hog pen behind their home. Mac threw a tantrum when he found out, but Etta Belle stood firm. Nothing could persuade her to relinquish her newfound treasure. Prayer sparkled as the delight of her life. She became a mighty woman of prayer, praying as she planted the garden while wearing her sunbonnet. She gathered the children together for evening family prayer when Mac left town for work and couldn't prevent it. She prayed for their daily needs. She pled fervently with God for the salvation of Mac and her other six children. And God answered. Over the years, eight of her nine children, my aunts and uncles, came to know the Lord though Mac stubbornly held to his sinful ways. One by one, the kids left home, and Mac and Etta grew old. Even the scattered gray hairs remaining on Mac's shiny scalp disappeared. Not a single tooth poked from his smooth gums. Alone with her life mate, Etta intensified her prayers for salvation. When the seven girls all married pastors, and Mac complained good-naturedly that God was getting even with him for his unholy lifestyle, Etta noted the softening of his spirit. After a major stroke nearly snatched away his life, and the doctor said he would never walk again, she prayed for healing. God answered so miraculously that in his 70s, Mac was able to single-handedly build a new house with rooms for visiting children and grandchildren and an actual inside toilet. But he refused to give credit to the Lord. He eventually changed, though, and Etta wondered why he seemed sweeter. She found out when Mac confided in a couple of his preacher sons-in-law. God shook me over hell, Mac told them. In response to Etta's prayers, God had shown Mac the horrors of hell and assured him that he was headed in that direction. The result? A terrified Mac asked the Lord to forgive his sins and come into his heart. Mac eventually became a believer, and because of Etta's faithful prayers, her husband will spend eternity in heaven, and I, her granddaughter, will see them both there. I just love the heritage of prayer that's in my family. And I know my daughter calls herself a prayer warrior now, or a woman of prayer, she calls herself. Prayer is just such a remarkable thing. And it's so amazing that we have that privilege that we can turn to God in prayer when we need things, and we need to pray according to his will. But he answers for our children when we're not there, when we can't be with them to oversee them, to see what's happening to them. He answers for them. I have another story I want to read to you. This is when Ray and I had only one child, Tyrone, and he was little. We found out that a hitman had been hired to kill us. And that was a terrifying time, I'll tell you. And it was terrifying all the way through the court trial. When we heard a tape recording of the plan of him telling some people how he wanted them to help him kill us. So here's a story I wrote about that in the same book. The book is 101 Stories of Answered Prayers from ANG Publishers. I tried handling the whole prayer burden alone. I didn't want to worry my parents, and we weren't supposed to tell our friends where I was hiding with my husband Ray and our year-old son. It was too dangerous. When I sneaked one quick call to a girlfriend, she told me she had called my house and a strange man answered. He's a federal agent, I told her. They have the house staked out in case the hitman shows up to kill us. That was all. A two-minute conversation to let her know we were alive, but I couldn't ask for prayer. She wasn't a Christian. She didn't know how to pray. Except for my sister, no one was praying. And I'd only told my sister because I wanted her to ease my parents' fears if they called our house and I didn't answer. I wanted to handle the burden alone, but I couldn't. I desperately needed the prayer support of other Christians who would call out to God for us. Our second night in hiding at the home of Gresham, Oregon's chief of police, I spilled the whole story over the phone to my mother and father in Ohio. One of the criminals Ray was investigating, I said, decided he wanted us all dead, so he hired a hitman to kill us. But since there are three Ray Taylors in the phone book, the man called our house and to make sure he had the right Ray Taylor. He heard the baby cry while he was talking on the phone, and he decided he couldn't kill a child. Since the guy who hired him said he wouldn't pay unless the hitman killed all three of us, the hitman came into Ray's office to turn state's evidence against the guy. Well, that's strange. Why would he do that? Dad asked. I have no idea, I said, but it saved our lives. After I gave them more details, they agreed that the Lord had already miraculously saved our lives, but we were still in grave danger. As soon as we got off the phone, they activated prayer chains all over Ohio and Michigan. I could feel it. I have no idea how many people prayed or precisely how they prayed, but I know federal authorities managed to secure a tape recording of the criminal outlining detailed plans to burn down our house and shoot us if we tried to escape. I know that a rental house we owned burned to the ground during the trial while the criminal was out on bail, but no one was injured. I know the courts convicted the criminal under a law called conspiracy to kill a federal officer. And even though we did find a safe place to live, none of those prayers diminished the fear that hung around me like smog. Maybe no one prayed for that, for my fear, since there were other more pressing concerns. But for months after the criminal was eventually incarcerated, I would glance furtively around to make sure no one had followed me home before I would turn into our own driveway. When my husband traveled, I lay awake at night, terrified at every sound. Finally, I prayed for release from the Lord. I prayed, Lord, please give me a verse in the Bible that I can cling to, a verse that will allay my fears. Then I did that silly thing that Christians shake their heads over. I let the Bible fall open, and I pointed to a verse at random. My finger landed on 2 Corinthians 1, 9-10. Indeed, in our hearts, we feared the sentence of death. But this happened that we might not rely on ourselves, but on God who raises the dead. He has delivered us from such a deadly peril, and he will deliver us. I knew immediately it was the answer to my prayer, and I haven't been afraid since. Well, it looks like waiting on Pastor Evans, we must have gotten our wires crossed. So I'll tell you a little bit I can about the book. What he says is that the street sort of mimics, and I said that the street sort of mimics the life of the church or what it's supposed to be, but that obviously it's based on something different. And he said respect is an unspoken rule that the street life takes very seriously. He said that they had such a thing with respect going that when they would pass a church, they would turn the music down in the car and say to everybody that they had to stop cussing and be quiet because the church was God's house and they had to be respectful. So he says that one of the main tenets of reaching gang members is to treat them with respect and develop relationship with them. I'm not going to do credit to his book, but I wish that you would get it. It's The Edge of Redemption, A Story of Hope for Rescuing the Unreachable. I think that book will give you lots and lots of hope. And I've enjoyed reading to you today. Sorry we missed our guest, and we'll see you next time on The River.
This is Tom Fuller saying thank you for joining us on The River today. I pray blessings have come your way. Please check out our hosts' websites to learn a little more about them. Maxine Marcellini is the author of Rebuilding Families $1 at a Time, Blended Families, and Raising Children in Blended Families. She's a life coach whose website, rebuildingfamilies.net, is full of family helps and resources. Jeannie St. John Taylor is the author and illustrator of more than 25 books for adults as well as children. You'll find her books plus a link to read her newest biblical fiction, City of 1,000 Gods, on her website at jeanniestjohntaylor.com. All our programs are archived for later listening enjoyment. Consider posting a comment after today's show. And please let your friends know about what's happening at The River. Most of all, remember, you are never alone in this river called life. Jesus is with you and only a prayer away.